Hatred of the brothers for Yosef. If you go through the story, the development, the Torah presents the development of the conflict between Yosef and the brothers, and also the story of how he wound up being sold as a slave. I mean, at first they wanted to kill him, and then if you go through that story, it's a lot of questions. Raises a lot of questions. You know that Yaakov sent Yosef out
to
visit the brothers in Shechem, right? This is in Vayeshev. Right, and they couldn't find them, and he found the man, and the man told him that they've left from here. There's a lot of questions about that. But first of all, it seems strange why Yaakov would send them out on such a dangerous mission. Because Yaakov was clearly aware of the fact that the brothers hated him. That was no secret. So why would Yaakov send him out on a dangerous mission? And Yosef also. Yosef knew that the brothers, we'll soon see that the brothers hated him. They didn't keep it secretly. It says openly, "V'layachlu darbo l'shalom." Even at the beginning, they couldn't talk peacefully to him.
Rashi says
as friends. But also, in the thing itself, in the incident itself, it's strange. Because it says they saw him from afar. This is on chapter Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Yud Ches, 18. Okay, chapter 37, verse 18. It says they saw him from afar. And before he gathered close unto them, they already sought methods of killing him. Then one man said to his brother, "Behold, this dreamer is coming. Now come and let us kill him, and we'll cast him into one of these pits, and we will say a wild animal ate him up, and we'll see what will happen, what will come of his dreams." So right away they worked out a whole thing, a plan. They're going to kill him, do away with him, right? And then of course they'll cover it up. They had a nice story worked out. They'll say he was attacked by a wild beast, and that's it. Get rid of this dreamer. Now right here we have to ask a question, because if you read these stories superficially, it would seem like you're dealing with bums over here. I mean, wouldn't you? Right. We're dealing with the great people. These were the leaders of the Shiftei Ka, the 12 tribes. Every one of them was a great person, right? That was worthy of being a leader in Klal Yisrael. So how do we understand such a phenomenon? On the superficial level, it seems like the lowest bums. I mean, brothers, we know there's all kinds of rivalries among brothers. Just because the father favored him, I mean, that's all it seems to be. Just on the basis, because if you read the story simply, Yaakov favored Yosef, and he gave him a special garment to show his favoritism, so the brothers hated him. But first of all, we would assume that men on this level would not react that way. But even if they do react that way, it's quite a large step to go from there to actually kill him. Didn't they have any conscience? Didn't they have the concept of right? There was nothing Ritzicha, just to kill him because he had these dreams. It doesn't make any sense. So we have to explain. We have to explain how this was justifiable in their framework. That itself is a question. Now, then it says, interventions of Reuven and the interventions of Yehuda. Because it seems strange that first they're prepared to kill him. Then it says, Vayishma Reuven, and Reuven heard, Vayatzileinu miyadam, and he saved them from their hands. Vayomer, he said, "Lo nakenu nefesh. We won't kill anybody. We won't take a life." Then Reuven said to them, "Do not spill blood. Cast them into one of these pits that are in the desert, and our hands will not be on him." Now, in brackets, this is not Reuven speaking. This is the Torah speaking. Laman hatzeloso miyadam l'hashivu alavim. In order to save him from their hands, to bring him back. In other words, Reuven's intention was to save him. In other words, he planned to come back later and save him. That was his real intention, but he couldn't tell them that. He couldn't tell them that, because he knew that at that stage of the game they wouldn't go along with it. But the question is, how did Reuven manage to persuade him of the idea? What was the idea? In other words, like this, that the way Reuven had it, he would still die. You follow? In other words, what were they supposed to do? They were supposed to throw him into a pit, right? And Reuven says, "We won't kill him." But we are killing him.
No, they were going to kill him and then cast him into the pit.
So what's the difference? Sure, you're right.
There's a chance.
They were, they were going to kill him and then throw him into the pit. You're right. So Reuven says, let's throw him into the pit.
Yeah, he wouldn't have died.
He would have died. I'll prove to you that he would have died. All right, so Rashi...
One second.
What was Reuven's plan? What was Reuven telling them? Let's throw him into the pit and then what? Then he can get out later? So, and leave him there, what's going to happen to him if we leave him there? He'll die. In other words, what is he telling the brothers? We'll throw him into the pit. And what's going to happen after we throw him into the pit? Oh, he'll just be... In other words, let's let him stay in the pit for a while and then he'll come out and everything will be okay? No. They wanted to kill him. But Reuven said, let's not kill him, let's just throw him into the pit.
They don't want to, I guess, the...
But what did they think would happen?
The mice themselves.
But they thought he would die.
Well, yeah, they thought...
Okay, they thought he would die. I'll prove to you that. All right, so Rashi says, V'abo reik ein bo mayim. The pit was empty, there was no water in it. So why does it have to say there was no water in it if it's empty? To tell us that there were snakes and scorpions in there. That it was a dangerous place to be. But you don't need that proof, though. Because take a look at Yehuda.
Excuse me,
Rabbi. One second, please. One second. Let me just make this point. Take a look at Yehuda. What good is it if we kill our brother? What gain if we kill our brother and cover his blood? Oh, when did Yehuda say this? After he was in the pit. So clearly, after he was in the pit, they recognized that they'd be killing him. Well, he's still telling them, what good is it if we kill our brother? Yeah? In other words, like this. Mamadavshach. When Reuven changed the plan, right, and got them to throw him into the pit, he had to give an argument that made sense to them. They were prepared to kill him. Now, either he argues that we shouldn't kill him. We shouldn't kill him because it's the wrong thing to do. If that's the case, then don't cast him into the
right.
pit. All right. On the other hand, if you're casting him into the pit and he's going to die in the pit, why will he die in the pit? All right, either because you say because the snakes, or even if you don't say the snakes, it was clearly a pit that he couldn't climb out of by himself. Because you see later on, when they decided to sell him as a slave instead, they had to, Vayim Shachu, they pulled him out of the pit. So clearly he was in a pit that he couldn't get out of. He would have died in that pit. Right? Now why? Now Reuven had to explain to these people, they aren't stupid people. What was the argument? The Manashach, do you agree that he's supposed to be killed or not? If he's supposed to be killed, so let's kill him ourselves.
The argument is,
if he's not supposed to be killed, so hey, are you allowed to cast him into the pit? It's a crazy argument. In other words, like this. Let's say we don't like somebody. We want to get rid of him. So we talk about killing him. So I'll say, no, we can't kill him. I mean, just because we dislike him, he's not chayav me. So I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll put him in a pit. That's a great idea. We'll put him in a pit from which he can't get out, and he'll starve to death. Oh, so that's fantastic. We didn't kill him. Now we know. I mean, according to Allah, you can't do a thing like that.
No.
And even if you're going to tell me that this is before Matan Torah, but it's murder. So Reuven, in other words, Reuven is arguing with them, we can't murder him. Right? Lo nakenu nafesh. We won't murder him. So what should we do? Throw him into the pit. Isn't that murder? I mean, what's the difference? Why would they go along with that plan more than their own plan? What's the difference? They're not stupid people. Were they fooling themselves? What was Reuven? Did Reuven convince them that it's okay? It would appear that Reuven convinced them that it's okay to throw a guy in a pit as long as you don't kill him. Moreover, if that's the case, my next question is, what was the argument of Yehuda? In other words, Yosef was saved from destruction in two steps. First you had the step of what? Of Reuven, where they threw him into the pit. But at this stage of the game, he still was going to die. Then Yehuda comes along with another argument. What was I want to understand? What was the argument of Reuven? What was the argument of Reuven? And what was the argument of Yehuda? Those are my questions. And the third question is, what was the cause? What brought the brothers, in other words? How are we to understand this? What brought the brothers to the stage where they were prepared to kill Yosef? And at least in their own minds, could look at it as being something justified. Now, the fact that they saw it as being justified is that, you see, what did they do? The Torah points out that in their own framework, they thought they were doing the right thing. How do we see that? That they thought they were doing the right thing?
To sell him, you mean, or?
To kill him. Because right afterwards, they sat down to eat bread. They sat down to eat bread. Now, I mean, who cares what they did? What is the Torah pointing together?
They didn't bother them.
They did it. And they didn't have any regrets. They didn't have any second thoughts. They sat down to eat bread. Now, either we're going to say that these are the most cold-blooded people. You know, like you read, like some of these animals today, like the Manson cult, when they went in and they slaughtered people, and then they go to the refrigerator, take out food and eat while the bodies are all around them. I mean, either you're dealing with the lowest level, or else the highest level. This can't be in between. Either you're on the highest level of people that act completely rationally, and therefore, so they did what they had to do, and they sat down to eat. Without regrets, that's also a level of greatness. A person can do something which is very, very difficult to do, even though it involves tremendous destruction, and then he sits down to eat. Yeah, he doesn't brood about it. Or else you're talking about the more problematical and contradictory it is. Reuven argues, do not shed blood.
That's
so what? So then, what should you do? Throw him into the pit? What's going to happen when he's in the pit? He's going to die. It's full of snakes, according to Rashi. It's not full of snakes, and he's not going to be able to get out of there. He didn't say, now we'll first discuss it, because he leaves. He leaves. And then it's only because of Yehuda. See, they sat down to eat. Then the thing was finished. It's only because of Yehuda, and because they saw a caravan coming along, and Yehuda came up with the plan. He seized the opportunity, because Yehuda wanted to save him. So he says, Ma betza, ki nargis. What do we gain if we kill him? Let's sell him. So then they pull him out of the pit.
We'll make profit.
But the point of it is, as a result of Reuven's plan was to cast him in the pit and let him die in the pit. Now my question is, it doesn't make sense. How can he get this idea across to the brothers? Because either he would have to tell the brothers. Either he's supposed to, it's right to kill him or it's wrong to kill him. If Reuven is saying that it's right to kill him, so then what's wrong? Kill him outright. Do it the proper way. If Reuven is saying that it's wrong to kill him, so then how can you cast him into a pit? How does that make it any better? I don't understand how that makes it any better. You mean it's better that we kill him indirectly? I think it's worse, in a sense, because now you're deceiving yourself. Now you're deceiving yourself. If you kill him directly, so you take responsibility. You're killing him indirectly, you did the same thing, but in your own mind, you're lessening the evil.
Well, I don't think that...
This is right. Halachically speaking, we do distinguish between a Meister Ritzicha and an indirect. It's true. I agree with you on that.
Over here he says, whenever the Torah
has to distinguish that way. Because in the halachic system, the death penalty is only used in certain frameworks, certain situations. For example, the Rambam says clearly that you can't judge the severity of the chait from the punishment. Lashon hara. A lashon hara guy loses all the maba. But there's no punishment. The bezin can't give him a punishment. So in the system of Bezdin, you can't give a guy the death penalty unless there was an act of Ritzicha. You can't the indirect Ritzicha. But in terms of philosophy, the guy's Ritzach. In fact, you see how Rosh Hashanah, Bezdin killed these guys. A mafia guy that orders killings day and night. He's a terrible Russia. He's a worse Russia than the hitman. In terms of who's a greater Russia, the only thing is that Bezdin can't carry out the death penalty unless there's a Meister Ritzicha. So I don't agree with that. Because he's responsible for all the evil. Who is the worst Russia? The one who's responsible for greater evil. The hitman is on a lower level. He just can do so much harm. The mafia guy who plans out the whole thing, he runs the whole operation, he's implementing a whole system, a whole organization of rishas. He's 10 times worse. There's no comparison. Alright? He's just saying, don't follow. In other words, the fact that Reuven came back after expecting to find him shows that he didn't expect the debate to occur. Because if there was going to be a debate, then maybe they would decide to take him out and kill him. So why was he expecting to find him there necessarily? I'll tell you why Reuven came back. Because Reuven came back because he thought the matter was complete. That makes sense.
Why did Reuven leave?
That's Reuven left because Reuven thought he had managed to save Yosef.
Right, so what is he leaving for?
Listen, he left it, whatever, he should have stuck around. Look, that's another thing. Why? He should have stuck around. That's because he's criticized.
Reuven seems to be just caring about what is fine.
I don't want to go too much into the personal character of Reuven, because Reuven didn't handle it correctly, and his main concern was purely what his father would think. Where am I going to go? How will I run away from the hatred of my father? From the anger of my father? Right. Right, his primary concern was for his father. That's why he acted irrationally in the sense that he should have not left. He should have stuck around to guard the situation. But, in his own mind, there was no need to stay around. Why? Because that was the final decision. There was not going to be a debate. If he held that there's going to be a debate, and they still might decide to kill him, why would he leave? Doesn't make any sense. It does not make any sense. Then he's totally crazy. I mean, you can't say that. So rather, he thought that the whole issue was resolved. The Yosef is cast into the pit. That's right. The brothers are going to eat and leave. Okay. So he left too. He had to leave quickly. They had time, so he skipped the meal. They left. Then his point was, I'll come back and I'll get him out of there. And how will bring him back? He'll work out a strategy. But he was obviously, he would not have left unless he was firmly convinced that nothing was going to be done, that Yosef was going to stay in the pit. And he's going to take him out.
So in other words, he made the pit in order to keep him there.
The purpose of the pit was a ruse. It would satisfy the brothers that he's going to die in the pit. And meanwhile, he'll come back, sneak back, and save him. It was, yes, to buy time, but to buy time for him, not for the brothers. He didn't tell that to the brothers. The brothers didn't know his intention. If they would have known his intention, they wouldn't have gone along with it. They would have killed him right away, obviously. Is that clear now? Let's trace the development of the hatred that the brothers had for Yosef. It would appear that the hatred was caused primarily by Yaakov's act of favoritism. It says in Pasuk Gimel now, chapter Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Gimel, that the Israel and Israel loved Yosef more than all of his sons, because he was a son of old age. All right, there's many Pratim on Ben Zakunim. He was a son who had the Chachma, he gave over the Chachma to him, or he looked like him. All right, so it was a very strong identification, which was based upon intellectual factors as well, that he saw great abilities in Yosef. All right, Vyas looks on his possum. So he made him, it was an emotional thing as well, as we see, because he acted it in an irrational way. There's nothing wrong with loving one child more than another. Emotionally, there's nothing wrong with it. But a parent should never demonstrate this to the children, because that's a very, 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 very painful emotion, jealousy.
Sure, my brother's an only child.
Vayir. His brother saw, that the father loved him more than all of his brothers. Vayisnu also, and they hated him. And they couldn't talk in a nice way with him. In other words, they didn't try and be echad b'pen, echad b'leiv. That's a good quality, that you shouldn't be deceitful about your feelings about someone. If you dislike him, don't act like you're his friend. Fine. Nevertheless, though, we see the Torah now describes that the hatred went through a process of development. It didn't stay at this stage of the game. My contention is that they would not have killed him, because you see the Torah goes on to describe more hatred, the development, the increase. How does it work?
If you don't like somebody,
here, let's take a look at the psukim. It says that Vayachalom Yosef Chalom, Yosef dreamed a dream. Vayagid Le'echav, and he told it to his brother. Vayosifu Otsneo Oso, and they hated him even more. That's the first increase. Vayomer Aleim, and he said to them, Shimu Na Chalom Azeh Asher Chalomti, listen to this dream that I've dreamed. So notice one thing though, that the hatred increased even before they heard the dream. You see? Because it says in Pasuk Hey that he told his brothers. What did he tell them? He only told them that he had a dream. They hadn't heard the dream yet. And still they hated him even more. That's what we're going to try and explain. Then he tells them the dream. And behold, that's in Zion. All right? We were all gathering our bundles of wheat, whatever it is in the field. And my bundle stood up and remained standing. And it was surrounded by your bundles. And they all bowed down to my bundle. So the brother said to him, Hamaloch Timloch Aleinu? Will you be the king over us? Imashal Timshal Banu? Are you going to rule over us? Vayusifu Otsno Oso. And they increased. They hated him even more. Al Chalomosav, on his dreams. Vial Dvarav, and on his words. What words is it talking about?
The Basam Ra.
The Basam Ra. Take a look at Rashi. Vial Dvarav, on his words. Al the Basam Ra, on the bad reports that he brought back. Shoyimei Vilavim. Which, of course, is also problematical. Because, first of all, why did they hate him now for the bad reports? The bad reports had occurred before. So why is it only after the dream that they hated him for the bad reports? Right? Moreover, what are the two increases? that are recorded. There's an increase in Pasuk Hey, as soon as he told them that he had a dream. That's one increase. And then there's another increase after they actually heard the dream. Well, how does that work? What took place over here? That's my question. Now, what did the... Also, notice that their reaction, there are two reactions over here. And the Torah doesn't waste words. They said, will you hamoloch timloch? Will you be king over us? That's melech, from the word melech. Hamashol timshol, will you rule over us? Now, those are two different expressions. So there must have been two things about that dream that bothered them. What's the difference between the hamoloch timloch and hamashol timshol? What's the difference between two? They're clearly two different things. Anybody? Reactions over here. One reaction is that you'll be the king. You see, that is a reaction of the ego. Meaning, even if you don't have any power, why should you have the title of king? See, for example, in England, there's a king, but the king has no power. You see, so the first reaction was a reaction in terms of the ego. Like, you're going to be the king. Why should you be the king? Even if the kingship has no particular power, even if it doesn't cost us anything, but you'll have the title and the glory of being the king. That's the first thing. Hamashal Timshal, that's a different reaction. You're going to exploit us? You're going to be a ruler over us? We're going to be subservient to you? That's a different...
Both. Then the bowing down, though. The bowing down shows
that
he's going to be...
That shows he's going to be king, too. I know, but that's true. But it shows king, too. Because you bow down to a king. I just mean to say that the reaction involved two things. A, well, that you'll be the king. The mere fact that you'll be the king and we won't, that's one cause of hatred. And the second thing is that we're going to be subservient to you. That's the second cause of hatred. Now I say it like this. What does it mean that they hated him before they heard the dream? How do we tell this? How do we tell this? What?
They didn't want to associate with him. And he's coming over to them to speak to them, tell them this thing.
That's it. In other words, like this, you see, at first it says they hated him. They hated him. Why they hate him? Because the real underlying reason throughout was because of the father's favoritism. Because the father favored him. But you have to recognize that when a person has a certain emotion about someone, right, due to emotional factors, like a hatred, a strong feeling of hatred, so then the psyche always seeks to justify. It has to have justification. You see what I'm saying? In other words, you can't hate a person you dislike a person, you speak badly about the person. You find flaws in the person. Right? Why do you do that? And then usually when you find those flaws, you're not always that objective. You know what I mean? Like you'll only pick out the bad things about the person. If somebody points out, but what about these other things? So then you try and discount them. Because you're not studying the person objectively, right? You're looking for a justification for your emotion. So when it says the father, they hated him because he was favored by Yaakov, they didn't have any, it's true they hated him, it was just an emotional thing, but it was lacking in justification. It didn't have any real justification. All right, what? So you see, they disliked him, they couldn't talk peacefully. Why? Because he's an immature kid. He has bad midos. But that's really not such a very, so what? So he's still a kid? You see? Now, when he told them the dream, the hatred was increased. Why was the hatred increased? Because it gave it a greater source of reality. Oh, he's a dreamer, he's a big shot. But as soon as he told them. See, when he told them that he had a dream, he told it in a way like he had an important communication over here.
Wasn't that back in the justification now?
Yeah, that's an...
Because really their anger is against the father, because they...
I know that. It's true, ultimately. But the hatred... The hatred was directed against Yosef.
Right.
Okay? So let's analyze it. So now, therefore, there's already a predisposition to find evil in Yosef. That's the state of mind that they're in. Now, when he came to them and told them that he had a dream, so the hatred was increased. Oh, he's a big shot already. See? Oh, he's a tremendous ego over here. He has these big dreams. You see? That's one increase, even before they actually heard the dream. But at this stage of the game, recognize one thing. They just were able to view him as being an egotistical person, but not necessarily as their enemy. You see? Not necessarily as their enemy. As a result, when they actually heard the dream, you see, it's different. You can imagine. It's one thing when I imagine that you have certain thoughts about me. I imagine it. I'm not sure 100%. But then when I hear your private conversations, I get the specifics. Ah, he's planning to do it. This guy has plans. He's a dangerous character. You see, so when they first heard that he's a dreamer, that increased the hatred. Because look at this person. He's not just a spoiled kid over here, but he's seriously corrupt. He's a tremendous egomaniac. He thinks he's got these important dreams. So that's one increase. They had more against him. But by Yosefa, the second one was a qualitative change. After they heard the dream, that increase was not a quantitative increase. The first increase was a quantitative increase. The second increase was a qualitative change. He's my enemy. Hamalach Timloch Aleinu? You want to be the king? Oh, now we know what this is all about. Up until this point, we just thought that you're corrupt, you're immature, you have defects, you're defective character. So, we don't like you. We can't deal with a person like you. But now we see that you're a real dangerous guy. You see? Not only are you dangerous, but your designs include us as well. We're part of your scheme, in other words. Part of your scheme is to make us subservient to you. But nevertheless, at this stage of the game, the hatred was not complete. Because what happened over here? He had another dream.
Rabbi, isn't a dream an extension of a person's thoughts by day?
Macher, and he had another dream. Vayesaferos Soliachov, and he told it to his brothers. Vayomer, he said, Hinei chalamti chalom od. I had another dream. Vine Hashemesh Vayarech, the sun and the moon, and Vyakados HaKachavim, and the 11 stars were bowing down to me. Vayesaferos Soliachov, Vayalechov. So Rashi learns that he told it twice. First he told it to his brothers, and then he told it to his father and his brothers. Vayigabov, and his father rebuked him, and he said, what is this dream that you dream? Shall I and your mother and your brothers come and bow down to you? Which he was trying to show the brothers that the dream
has no substance.
Because
the mother is dead.
Just like your mother is dead, right? So too, the whole thing is absurd. He was trying to defuse the hatred, Yaakov. But Yaakov really believed that it was prophetic. But here again, isn't it very strange? I mean, first of all, why would Yosef, after witnessing their reaction to the first dream, why would Yosef go ahead and tell him the second dream? Was he completely stupid? It doesn't make any sense either. But nevertheless, he tells them. The first time around, he was naive. But after the reaction, why would he tell him again?
He didn't get the reaction before he told him the dream?
Certainly after the first dream, he should not have told them. By the way, I forgot to answer, though, one question. Remember I said, after the first dream, it says they hated him for his dreams and his words. What are the words of the Dibur Hamara? Right. But the Dibur Hamara had come before. Oh, this fits in with what I wanted to say. In other words, the Dibur Hamara by itself, prior to the dreams, wasn't such a terrible thing. They just looked at him as being a child. He's immature, he's a child. So therefore, it's not such a dangerous thing. So let him talk about us. Who cares? But after the first dream, when they saw that he has vision, that he has the dreams of grandeur, he wants to have power, so now they hated him for the Dibur Hamara. Now they realize that the Dibur Hamara was part of a plan to put them down, to destroy them in the eyes of their father. It's only at this point that the Dibur Hamara, that the bad reports became a threat to them. That's why Rashi says they hated him for the Dibur Hamara at that point. Now, it says that the father rebuked them. But nevertheless, take a look at Yud-Aleph. There's a difference. It says, V'yekanu bo'echav, his brothers were jealous of him, and his father guarded the matter. Now you see that there was a different reaction. The reaction to the first dream was a reaction of hatred. The reaction to the second dream was a reaction of jealousy. The question is why. Why did the first dream provoke anger, and why did the second dream provoke jealousy? What was so special about the second dream? It should have provoked greater hatred. But that's not why they hated it. They're jealous of him. They didn't know V'yavu Shamar Sadavar. V'yavu Shamar Sadavar was private.
Just for the fact that it was a second dream.
So why did that make him more than jealous of? Having dreams?
One dream, but the second dream already.
So they're jealous of the fact that he had dreams?
No, I'm saying it's something that the father and the mother included in this one.
Okay. Well, the thing is like this. Rabbi Chait explained the difference between the two dreams at one point. I don't want to go, it's on another tape. Because it says that when they came down to Mitzrayim, and Yosef saw them, and he recognized them, and they didn't recognize him. So it says that he remembered the dreams.
and he accused them of being spies. So Raichet asked, what does the remembering of the dreams have to do with the accusation that they are spies? And then Yosef put into action his whole plan, you know, the whole plan that he had with regard to make them think that they were under suspicion and to lock up one of the brothers and so forth.
Sure.
Yeah. So Raichet said that he remembered the dreams, that the two dreams indicated that he would be the ruler. But what was the difference between the first and the second? The first dream pertained, was expressed through the stalks in the field. See, through economics, in other words. Economic sustenance. That showed that he would have the power in terms of economic sustenance. But the second dream depicted the brothers as stars and the celestial beings. You see? That they would be celestial beings. In other words, that the sun is the most bright of the celestial beings, and the moon and the 11 stars, this refers to them like when Abram had two dreams. One dream was that your children will be as the dust of the earth, numerically. Then it'll be as the stars of the sky. The stars of the sky means luminaries, the spiritual, the geniuses, you see? So the second dream indicated that they would all bow down to him and acknowledge his supremacy in terms of the spiritual life as well.
So
in other words, like this. So because Yosef had no right. Yosef was engineering that whole scheme against them in order to cause them to do tshuva. In order to cause them to do tshuva, it was for their own spiritual welfare. But the question is, what right do you have to go into somebody else's life? You know, nobody has a right. You can try and get a person to do tshuva through words. But I can't go into your life and take away your money and your car and make all kinds of manipulations, even though it really is for your benefit. Because it's quite possible that, you're tied down with businesses, with obligations. I could come in and take away a few things, and you would improve. I'm not going to do it. Because only God has the right to do that. I have to operate within halachic bounds. You see? So what right did Yosef have to lock them up, to make them go through pain? The answer is through the Nevuah. Because the Nevuah, he then recognized...
He locked
him up. You know, he locked up Shimon. He locked up one brother. He also did that. And then he accused them of being spies.
Maybe later.
Yeah, later on. Because he recognized that he was destined to have the spiritual dominion over them. That's the second dream. But he didn't know that the spiritual dominion would come about through the first dream, through the economic power. So then when he was in a situation of economic power, and they came down to him and he saw them, so then he tied the two together. And he recognized that he was given a prophecy from God to use the economic power in order to maintain the spiritual dominion. That was giving him rishus to go ahead with his plan. So anyways, as far as we're concerned, dream pertained to economic power. That's what it indicated, that he had the desire for economic power. So that is something which they didn't really care about per se. It wasn't a value to them. So therefore they weren't envious. They just hated him because it indicated that he had bad characteristics. He was an egotist, and they hated him for it. But they weren't envious. The second dream, however, indicated that he would have supremacy in the realm of the spiritual. That's something that they really wanted the most. That's what they valued. That's why it elicited envy. You see? That's why it elicited, even though they said it's false, that it's not true, they denied that he had it, but at the same time, it elicited envy. A part of them must have believed that there was something there. But I want to say like this, that at this stage, as a result of the second dream, a change occurred. See, in other words, this was the culmination of the hatred. At this stage, they reached the conclusion that this person has to be killed. Why? Because you see the type of person that he is. The first dream showed that his objective is for power. That he wants to be a ruler. But as long as it's confined to purely physical means, he's looking for the physical, the wealth, and the glory, so he's not such a threat to us. But then they saw the second dream, that he's not satisfied just to have dominion with regard to the economic. He wants to have dominion over our spiritual lives as well. Oh, and he's a corrupt person. This man can destroy us completely. He has to be killed. At this stage of the game, they recognize that he's a threat. In other words, according to their premises, they were wrong. We know that they were wrong. But I'm trying to show you that their motivation in killing him was not just because the father happened to favor him, but rather they saw as a result of the dreams that he's a corrupt person who wants power, but now he's not satisfied merely to have power in the material world, but he wants to have power in the spiritual realm as well. This person is a very, very dangerous person. You see, there are many people that are trying to build empires. You know, physically, they want wealth. Take a person like, take a person like Trump, for example. We just talked about this morning. It would appear at first that he's only interested in wealth, business. Ah, now he's not satisfied. Now he wants to run the city. He wants to get involved in government and politics. As he has more ambitious. He wants to rule people's lives. I'm just trying to use to show you. Yeah. No. Wait. Yeah. When he's looking for them, so he lost them. He found them, and a man found them. Ramban says that was planted by the hashgacha, that a man should find them, because everything that happened was hashgacha. So he says, the man asked him, what are you looking for? So there's an interesting exchange here, which can be seen on different levels. By Yomer, he said, Es achai anochi mevakesh, I'm searching for my brothers. Which literally means, I'm searching for my brothers, but it has a deeper meaning. Please tell me, where are they with the sheep? And the man said, Nosu mizeh, they've gone up from here, they've traveled up from here. Now what does Rashi say? Literally it means they've gone away from here. Rashi says, what does it mean? Hesiyu atzmon, Mina Akva. They've broken away from brotherhood. They've broken away from me. He was giving a hint. In other words, at this point, they broke their identification with him. So you see that they went through a process of change. Up to this point, he was still their brother. All right, so he's corrupt. We don't like him, but he's still our brother. As a result of the second dream, they broke off their Nasumizah. So what was Yosef saying? Yosef is Acha Enochim Mavakesh. He's searching for his brother. He was trying to win them back. Now I say to you, why did he... They both were mistaken, by the way. Yaakov and Yosef were both mistaken. They were both, their judgment was clouded by emotions. Why did Yosef tell him the second dream? After he had seen their reaction to the first dream? What would you say?
Well, maybe they accepted it.
No, after this, why would they? Yeah, because he completely misunderstood the nature of the situation. You follow? Yeah. In other words, due to his own overestimation of the self, he wasn't in line with reality. He thought that the brothers were basically, he failed to recognize the depth of the emotion, that their hatred was rooted in a very deep emotion. He thought that it's a misunderstanding. And therefore, I'll just present more evidence. He never understood that it was really, he couldn't say, why should they object to me? You see, he suffered himself from an overestimation of the self. You see, that he's superior to them. And he's the one who should be the ruler, and they should be very happy to hear this. He couldn't identify with their emotions. That was his problem. He couldn't identify with their emotions. Because he couldn't identify with their emotions, you see, he failed to recognize how deep the hatred was. That, especially after the first dream, why tell him the second dream? Oh, the answer is because he thought it's just a dispute. It's a difference of opinion. That they weren't convinced by the evidence. And now he'll show them another dream, which is even more significant, and now they'll be convinced. That's why he told to them, and then he said, now let's go and tell it to Yaakov. In other words, I have the evidence over here. See, he didn't realize, he understood that it was so deeply rooted in emotion, evidence is not going to help. See, Yaakov recognized more than he did. Yaakov recognized that there's a deep emotional thing over there. That's why he sought to defuse it. He rebuked him. Yaakov believed that it was true. But Yaakov recognized that it's absurd to try and that he's doing a crazy thing over here. It's absurd to try and convince them by showing them more dreams. It's only going to make them angrier. So that's why he sought to defuse it. But Yaakov also didn't recognize the depths of the hatred. Because if he had done so, he would never have sent them out to the... he would never have sent them out. I mean, if he would have known how much they hated him, then how could he send them out to be killed? So Yaakov also distorted the nature of the hatred. But at this point... You see, I said, Yosef was trying to win his brothers back. That's why when he saw the man, he said, Es achai anochi mavakesh, I'm searching for my brothers. He wanted to reestablish the bonds, the relationship with the brothers. You see? He said, Nasu mizeh, hesiyu atzma min achva, that they have broken away. They've broken away. They don't regard you as a brother anymore. They regard you as a danger, as a threat, and you're chayav misa.
Did Yosef realize?
I tried to explain what the basis of their decision was to kill him. That's why, as I think Jake mentioned, you see it says, they saw him from afar, and before he came nigh unto them, so already they began to seek ruses to kill him. And then they said to me, what did they say? He made Baal HaKalomos HaLazeba. Behold, the dreamer is coming. The one who has the dreams. Let's go, Viata, now let's go and kill him. So why are we killing him? We're killing him because of the dreams. What do you mean? What's wrong with a person that has dreams? You kill a person because he has dreams? It's absurd. Yeah, the answer is, as a result of his dreams, we now know what his true intentions are. His true intentions are to be the master over us, physically and spiritually. And this is something which we just can't tolerate. He's a threat to our very existence.
Because
we have to kill him.
Because you dream something that shows that...
We say, let's say you had a dream and you were sitting on the throne and I was bowing down to you, right? So I'd laugh it off. I'd say, look, I see you have a tremendous ego. You'd like to be the king over me. But I wouldn't regard you as a threat. Yeah, but let's say you were convinced that that's a prophetic dream, which is giving you the power to go ahead and do it. Oh, then I'd say, this guy's a dangerous guy. Look at the situation. In other words, Yosef is a dangerous guy. He has a desire to enslave them, and he's totally convinced that he's acting at the behest of God's will. This is the worst threat in the world. I mean, all the dictators. Even Hitler, Yimach Shemo, in his own mind, he believes he acts at the behest of Providence. Every dictator in the world is convinced that he's doing what God wants him to do. Now, can you have a more dangerous situation? Here's a man that has a desire to enslave us, and he's convinced that God is telling him to do it. Well, put yourself in their situation. He is, as far as they're concerned, he's a danger, he's a threat. What are they supposed to do with a person like this? And he's not a stupid person. He's the smartest of the brothers. He's a shrewd guy. He has complete control over Yaakov. He's completely hoodwinked Yaakov. I mean, they're lost. They're out. And not only them, but they're fighting for the preservation of Yadus. Well, what are we supposed to do? Now, what was Reuven's argument? Yeah, my question was, though, what type of an argument is this? They have a very good taina. How did he manage to convince them to go along with his plan? How did he manage to convince them to go along with his plan? In other words, Manushach, either Reuven has to agree that he's Chayav Misa, in which case they have a right to kill him. Or else Reuven is saying that he's not Chayav Misa, and therefore we don't have a right to throw him in the pit. How does it work? What was his argument? That he argued with them that we should do the most rational thing. Right? But it appears to us, the situation appears to us, right? We have to act the way the situation appears to us. It appears to us that he's a threat, and we can't allow this person to continue. But can we say with absolute certainty, 100%, that this is the way it is? Maybe we've made a mistake. It is possible we've made a mistake. It's possible that maybe he doesn't have such intentions. Maybe he'll change. It's possible maybe there is something to those dreams. You see? Now, we can't let the guy go free. Because if that's the case, we're endangering ourselves. So we've got to do something. But aren't we better off? In other words, shouldn't we leave open some possibility that if we act and we kill him, so then we cut off the other possibility. Maybe we're wrong. We don't give the Hashkacha a chance to operate it all over here. Because God is not going to interfere and stop us from killing him. That's Bechira. But why don't we do something, right, which is sufficient to protect ourselves, right? And it does leave open some door. It leaves open some door that if there is something to it, then God will save him. At least we have not closed off that possibility. So what do we have to lose? That's what he argued against them. He says, lo na kenu nafesh. We don't have to. We should only take the action which is the absolute necessity. But we shouldn't go beyond the absolute necessity. You see what I'm saying? It is possible to protect. We only have a right to protect ourselves and do that which is absolutely necessary to protect ourselves, but not more. So there is a difference between actually killing him and putting him in a situation. He's in a situation. There's such a thing as the Ashkacha. If there's any substance to what he's saying, if he's under the Ashkacha, a way will be found to get him out of there. But if he's under the Ashkacha to a certain extent, then God won't let us kill him either. But that's demanding too much. You follow what I'm saying? It's making it more difficult. We don't have a right to do that. To impose such a... you can't take a tzaddik and throw him in front of a train and say, well, if he's a tzaddik, God will save him. You see? I mean, you do... What they were saying was, we don't... That's too drastic a move. So it's not complete justice. Let's do the thing which is necessary to protect ourselves. We can't let the guy go around free because, as it appears to us, he's a danger. On the other hand, we can satisfy our own requirements. We can satisfy our own requirements with a smaller move by putting him in the pit. It's true that will probably cause him
to die, but now it's easier, so to speak. It's easier, so to speak, for the Ashkacha to operate and to save him. That's what he was saying. So and that they accepted. The opportunity, he waited. He waited. You have to see, you have to understand also. Yehuda, I say, went one step further. And that is to say, if that is the case, we don't have a right to test God. Sometimes, as I'm saying, we have no choice, we have to do something, right? But we have to leave a door open for the Ashkenazim. But we don't have a right to make it more difficult within the framework of nature. We can't, you know what I'm saying? You can't impose on the situation greater changes than are absolutely necessary, if you get what I'm talking about. So we have another way of doing it. Let's sell as a slave to Mitzrayim. This way is still alive. Now, as far as we're concerned, we've eliminated the danger. I mean, what are the chances of a person being sold as a slave in a strange land that he's going to come back and rule over us? Practically speaking, we've eliminated it, you see? But we've left open a greater door for the Hashgacha. In other words, the only way that this person will ever come back is if it's God's will, you see? But it's much better to do it that way. At least we're not responsible for his death. The guy's still alive. He's functioning. It's less of a chait against him. In other words, to protect ourselves more, we're not allowed to do more harm to the person, you see, than is absolutely necessary. We can't do more harm to a person than is absolutely necessary. So Reuven's first point was, well, we could throw him into the pit. Now he's saying, well, we don't have to do that. Because we can, what gain if we kill him? What do we gain by killing him? That's my betza. What do we gain? In other words, what do we gain in terms of our own concerns? Our own concerns in acting against him are to protect ourselves. So where is the gain in killing him over selling him as a slave? As a slave, he's harmless as far as we're concerned. He's harmless. He's going to be enslaved in a strange land. That's it. He can't harm us anymore. At the same time, we have sinned against him on a lower level. And you see what I'm saying? So therefore, that's the best way to go. So therefore, they took him out, and they did it. Now the question is, so why did Reuven go for that right away? Why did Reuven go through this argument? It went through two stages. Why couldn't they go directly to this argument?
Because the caravan wasn't around.
Because the answer is that they weren't ready for the second. They weren't ready for the second one. The second argument demanded that they give up. What I'm saying is like this, that it's not just a situational thing. It could be that he got this idea first and then he got that. I mean, it's not just that. I'm saying that they weren't ready for the argument of Yehuda. It had to go in stages. The main psychological problem that Reuven faced was to get them to give up the desire to kill him. Because it was all based upon an emotion there. So there was a desire to kill him. It was an emotional thing as well. Of course, they justified it in their own minds. Of course. So he, in other words, gave them a plan which it would satisfy the desire to kill him. Once they had given into that plan, that they're not going to have the emotional satisfaction of killing him directly, they were able to settle for this, then it was possible for them to go one step further and to get them to give up the emotional satisfaction of seeing him dead. You see? But at the point when Reuven intervened, you see, the emotion was at such a pitch that they wouldn't have listened to that argument. They would not have listened to the argument of Yehuda. That's why Yehuda bided his time. All right, I mean, I don't know what he would have done if Reuven wouldn't have intervened. We don't know. But Reuven intervened. And that satisfied. They were satisfied. As a result, they were satisfied. That's it. Then, once they were satisfied, they had already discharged some of the hatred against Yosef by the mere act of casting him into the pit. Then the caravan came along, and Yehuda used the seichel. Now I'll be able to get them to give up the whole notion. You see, once a person has satisfied the emotion to a certain extent, then you can get them to give it up already. You see? Then he comes into the picture with this new plan. He says, this is a much more rational plan. Because my bets are, we don't need this. Right? So why should we take the chance of doing a sin? We also have to consider the fact that we might be sinning over here. So let's diminish the extent of the sin if we happen to be wrong. So let's sell them. Ah! At this stage, they were willing to accept it. Because now they had relinquished a certain amount of the emotional desire to see him killed. That's when Yehuda's plan comes into the picture. Okay, that's basically, I think I answered the question.
Yeah.
I mean, as Rich mentioned before, I want to give another shiur on the difference between Reuven and Yehuda. You see, at this stage of the game, both brothers acted to save him, and both failed. They both failed. In other words, they were both seeking to express their responsibilities as leaders. Reuven stepped in because he was the oldest and he had felt he had a certain responsibility. Yehuda also stepped in because of his own position. Both of them failed.
And why did Yehuda fail?
Yehuda failed. You see Yehuda failed because in the very next parsha it says, take a look at Lamed Ches, we did it last night. Vayehi Be'esahi, it wasn't that time. Vayehi Yehuda Me'esachav, and Yehuda went down from his brothers. Vayehi Adish Adulami Yishmal Chira. And he went to this person, Adulamite, his name was Chira. So Rashi says on the word, Vayered, that he went down, that he experienced the Yerida. He experienced the Yerida. What does it mean, Yerida? That he went down in their estimation. They removed him from leadership. Why? Because when they saw the suffering of their fathers, when they saw the suffering of their father, right? So what they say? He says, "Lamed." Why is this parsha next to the parsha of the Mechira? Lamed to teach you shall redo os echav megdulaso, that the brothers removed him from his gedula, from his leadership. In other words, he was a leader. Kisharo b'tzaras aviyah. When they saw the suffering of their father, Amru, they said to him, Ato Marzal Machro, you told us to sell him. Ilu Amarzal Ashivo, had you told us to bring him back, Hayinu Shomulach, we would have listened to you. So you see? You see a nice lesson in this. It never pays to give in to the emotions of children. Say, of children or of anybody else. Because first, you take a position of weakness because you want to give in, you want to be popular. He wanted to be popular. As a result, he lost his popularity. See, if a person is seeking to do the popular thing in order to get the approval of the people, he'll wind up being unpopular. Because it leads to failure. You take the popular course. So now they like you. Oh, he's a good guy. But it leads to failure. And when it leads to failure, who do they blame? They blame you. Oh, but I did it because you wanted it. Yeah, but you're a leader. You should not have given it down emotions. You see? Also, however, it says that Reuven also was... insufficiently, with insufficient strength, because there's a chazal. Into chazal say about Reuven that take a look at Chaf Aleph. It says Vayishma Reuven. Reuven heard their plan. It says Reuven heard their plan, which means that Reuven was not involved in the plan to kill him. He heard the plan. Vayati Leu Miyadam, and he saved them from their hands. So Rashi says on that, what do you mean he saved them from their hands? He didn't save them. He didn't save them. They were supposed to be killed anyways. Where was the saving? It wasn't a saving. So if you take a look at Rashi, 1 second. That I know that. Chazal's like this, that had Reuven known that just for what he did, this proves that I was right before, that his plan, as presented, was not, his intention was to save, but the object of plan was to have him die in the pit. Now, it says like this, that had Reuven known that just for what he did, for having him thrown into the pit, the Torah was going to say, Vayati Leu Miyadam, that to give him the credit for saving him from their hands, right? Had Reuven known in advance that the Torah was going to say that, he would have carried him back on his shoulders to his father. Interesting statement. Had he known, Chazal said this, had Reuven known at that time that just for what he did was just to have him thrown into a pit. Just for that alone, the Torah would say, and he saved him from there, would give him credit, as though he actually saved his life. Then he would have had the strength, he would have taken him on the shoulders, and nobody could have stopped him. He would have, he was lacking something, and he would have carried him back. Which means that he was lacking, he could have done more than he did. But he didn't have sufficient strength. You see, he was caught in a bind. On the one hand, it was a matter of the superego of his father. It was an ego bind. Because on the one hand, he was afraid of the condemnation of his father. He couldn't face his father. On the other hand, he couldn't tolerate the condemnation of the brothers. You see? So these two forces were in contention. Now, what he did was, he tried to work out a compromise for himself. He tried to work out a compromise, but it was insufficient. Because by the time he came back, you see, he left the situation. He left the situation. That has to be with meaning. I mean, I'll go into that another time. But by the... But what the Chazal is saying is that had he known the credit he would have gotten from the Torah just for this one deed, then he would have had sufficient ego strength to overcome the brothers and take them all the way back. You see? But he didn't have enough ego strength. He had enough ego strength to intervene against the direct thing of killing, but not to go any further than that. In other words, his plan was only successful because it still enabled them to have the satisfaction of killing him. That he couldn't break them down.
But if he didn't know what the Torah would say about him, if he didn't know the great credit he would have gotten, he would have gone even further. He would have broken down. So both brothers at this stage failed. Reuven failed, and Yehudah failed. But we'll take up a comparison in the, you know, from other sources to see the difference between Reuven and Yehudah. That's a different issue.